Chapter 17. A flash flood of celebration rolled through the streets of Bloodroot, the streets filled with thousands of orcs of all shapes and sizes, bedecked in ceremonial paints and teal and sunglow beads. Spontaneous choruses formed in the streets and burst into song. The factory floors emptied, the shouts of the workers drowning out the protests of their managers. Warriors delivered great ululating cries that rose above the roar of the crowd. Gorm caught only flashes of the festival erupting around him. He remembered Xerthraka announcing that the burial stones of Og Magurd had returned home, and a great blast of drakehorn trumpets announcing the decree. He recalled carrying one of the stones through the dirty streets, orcs cheering and jostling for a better view of the sculptures and the heroes who had saved them. Vendors pressed through the crowds to press gifts into the heroes' hands— braised meats, strings of beads, intricate knives, and other trinkets. They were led atop a great platform at the center of town, where Chief Xerthraka placed the miniature death masks on each of the marble heads. One by one, the names of the ancestral warriors were read aloud by Xerthraka's children, and the entire city roared the names in reply. Then the ceremony ended, and the celebration began in earnest. At the festival's zenith, Gorm stood with the other heroes in the chieftain's tower, watching a tide of green flow to the rhythm of the band's frenetic drumming.
"Tomorrow will be a new day,"
Xerthraka told them.
"What will happen tomorrow?" Gorm asked.
"We will go to work."
"That sounds a lot like yesterday, actually," said Heraldin.
"But tomorrow we will have the stones. We'll be that much closer to the dream."
"I don't mean to be rude," ventured Heraldin, "but I'm still not seeing much difference."
"The change we seek will not come all at once,"
Xerthraka reflected.
"It may not come in my lifetime, but when I was a whelp, our tribe was starving, and today I bounce fat grandchildren on my knee. Tomorrow, who can say? My grandchildren's grandchildren will have riches that my people can only dream of, and they will know that we built their inheritance slowly, day by day, brick by brick."
The chieftain nodded at the raucous crowd in the streets below.
"The stones are a very big brick."
"I suppose they are, my friend," said Heraldin. Xerthraka turned to Gorm.
"A bigger question is, what will you do tomorrow?"
"The guild has an office in Hertswood, not 3 days west of here," said Gorm. "We'll go to turn in the quest there. And after that, well..."
Niln seemed far less insistent that the heroes track down a long-dead Sten, and Johan had seemed certain there wouldn't be any more assignments coming from the Temple of Tandos. It was likely that the Heroes of Destiny would take a hiatus. Perhaps he could make the Festival of Orchids after all.
"Who can say?"
said Xerthraka. Gorm smiled.
"Who can say?"
Yet regardless of how long the party would stay together, one member wouldn't be joining them. A crowd of admirers parted as Gorm approached the table where Tibrin was attacking a pile of spiced meats and roasted tubers.
"Well, seems like you've done pretty well here for yourself," he said.
"Aye,"
said Tibrin, grinning up from a half-eaten pig haunch. Gorm requested a word alone with his squire. The orcs reluctantly left them, save for a wise one in crimson robes who had been designated as Tibrin's translator.
"Tibrin, you're a great friend, and we owe our success to you, but I've been wanting to tell you something for a while now."
"Yes?"
"You're absolutely rubbish as a squire."
"Grat?"
"He say, what?"
said the orcish translator.
"My gear would fall apart if it wasn't for me taking care of it. You ate half me supplies, and I wish I were talking about me rations. You're too short to saddle the horses, and they're frightened of ye anyway. I've never heard of a squire half so bad as ye, and I thought ye'd improve, but if anything, you're getting worse. I don't even know how that's possible."
The goblin looked crestfallen as the translator conveyed Gorm's message.
"Tibrin fight?"
"Aye, ye can fight better than some, but a squire ain't supposed to fight. Ye keep on running into trouble and saving our lives."
"And miraculously surviving certain death," Gorm mentally added. The problem was that you might get a miracle one time for every 20 desperate situations. A professional hero couldn't rely on luck alone to survive, or to keep a friend alive.
"You're fired, Tibrin."
Gorm dropped a pouch of Gilton on the table.
Here is your back pay, plus severance. And coincidentally, a job offer from Chief Zerthraka.
He presented a piece of paper covered in jagged glyphs.
Zugarg!
The goblin grabbed the paper and read eagerly.
He say, is it truth?
Added the translator.
Aye. Apparently Zerthraka needs more guards for the burial stones. He figured having one of the heroes who retrieved the stones on the brigade would be inspiring to them.
The Bargast.
He say, I not a professional hero. I lad, not a professional, just a hero.
The goblin's giant amber eyes misted up. He choked out a speech in hurried shadow tongue.
He say that he very grateful. You don't have to tell me, said Gorm. I know what he's saying.
It would be an understatement to say that the Heroes Guild was important to Hertzwood. It would be far more accurate to say that Hertzwood was important to the Guild. The entire town was more like an extended campus for the massive guild hall at its center. The houses and shops clumped around the great stone building like toadstools around an old stump. The streets were filled with arbiters, clerks, and assistants, all wearing smart navy blue suits and lapel pins that bore the Guild's sword and sorcery insignia. There were also heroes, hordes of them. Crowds of warriors in ornate armor languidly patrolled the streets, glowing blades slung over their shoulders. Shadowy assassins and mysterious rogues lurked in every alley. The shrines overflowed with clerics and paladins, meditating over flaming warhammers and other instruments of divine wrath. Enough mages to fill a small academy sat in the taverns and tea-houses, poring over spellbooks and scrolls. The air thrummed with the magic of countless enchanted armaments.
"Must be a big job coming through here soon," said Gorm.
"Or the rumor of one," said Caitha. "Good quests are scarce these days."
"Well, then we'd best put in our claim fast,"
Gorm muttered. The Ashen Tower was still filled with the loot the heroes couldn't carry, and until they filed the hoard with the guild, it was still technically up for grabs. The Heroes Guild crouched at the center of Hertzwood, a massive spider among a web of roads that drew in visitors. Underneath the towering spires and flapping sapphire banners, beyond the granite facade carved with images of heroic battles, paper pumped through its red tape veins. It inhaled unknown men and breathed out heroes with the documents to prove it. Gorm and the heroes waited in a long line of heroes and prospective clients for their turn at one of the tiny windows at the back of the main hall. Behind the glass sat a thin, balding, and slightly unhappy-looking clerk, the human equivalent of mashed porridge. When he smiled at them for a fraction of a second, it was the kind of smile that says, "Regulation dictates that I must smile at you now."
"Greetings," said Niln. "My party and I—"
"Names?"
demanded the clerk. A glimmer of recognition lit up his beady eyes as Niln introduced the party, and he was already leafing through a stack of paperwork before the high scribe finished.
"You were expected,"
the clerk told them, peering at a memo through his thick bifocals.
"You are to meet with Arbiter Thorpe, office 317, third floor, on the left after the stairs. Next!"
"How did they expect us?" Heraldin wondered aloud as they made their way up the stairs.
"Must have got word from Bloodroot," said Gorm.
Arbiter Thorpe reminded Gorm of the deadly dire walruses of the Ice Gale Sea, though more pink and shriveled, and far more docile. The old man was slumped behind the mahogany desk at the back of his spacious office, his mustache swaying gently as he snored. He burst into a fit of snorting and coughing when Niln gently prodded him awake.
"Hey, yes? Who? What? Hey!"
said the Arbiter, his spectacles dangling from his face as he peered wildly about the room.
"Niln of the Almatrans, sir, and these are Gorm Ingerson, Caitha of House Tyriath, Heraldin—"
all right, I know who you are," grumbled Arbiter Thorpe. "The Almatrans, right? Mission for King Handor, long live his majesty, yes? Hey, hey."
"Yes," said Niln.
"Good, good, and I am Arbiter Thorpe. Hey, now, you were after the what's names, the goblin stones, the gnome rocks."
"The elven marbles," said Gorm.
"That's the one. I would have got there eventually, hey?"
The old man cleaned his spectacles.
"Good. And you have them with you?"
"No, sir."
"What? What are you doing here, then, hey?"
Niln relayed the story of their adventure, with occasional interjections from the other heroes.
"What? The orcs?"
said Arbiter Thorpe.
"Most irregular, most irregular. Loot must be processed. It must be divided by an arbiter of the Heroes Guild. And we don't just go handing national treasures to Shadowkin, believe you me. Hey, on what authority, hey? On whose authority did you think you were acting?
King Handor's, said Niln, holding up the king's commission.
What? Hey, and you have proof? Let me see that.
Arbiter Thorpe reviewed the documents carefully, his mustache bobbing up and down as he scanned every page of the king's commission and the Almatran contract, and even the maroon binder on the elven marbles.
Very well, then, he said eventually. Highly irregular, but in order.
So, are we done now? Asked Niln.
Good heavens, no! Ha! Ha! Now we're ready to start!
Gorm had always found tallying the loot and points to be the most tedious part of professional heroics. Thorpe personally counted, catalogued, and indexed every piece of loot down to the last copper before placing them in a great iron strongbox. Niln filled out a claim on the remaining loot within Ashen Tower, while the heroes filed kill reports to account for every creature and foe dispatched.
I've got enough points on my license to gain a rank, said Laruna as she finished tallying her points.
That you have, hey?
Said the Arbiter, taking a momentary break from counting to look over the forms.
And it looks like your wizard has gained 3. Congratulations, my boy!
Jin forced a polite smile and resumed his paperwork. Gorm resumed his own paperwork. He had an extra file to complete, as he was requesting the restoration of his old ranks and certifications. His hands shook as he wrote out the request. 10 ranks of warrior, a certificate of master axe proficiency, 10 ranks of berserker. The tally of his old qualifications was long, but if facing a lich in the direct service of the King of Andoran wasn't enough to get his ranks back, he didn't know what would be. The sun was casting long shadows through the office windows when the last of the paperwork was finally settled. Arbiter Thorpe collected the loot catalogs, kill reports, the rank requests, the king's commission, the folio on the elven marbles, and every other scrap associated with the quest, and assembled them in a thick manila envelope.
"The papers will remain in my office until arbitration," he said,
sealing the envelope with a dribble of wax.
"All loot will remain in the strong box until said appointment, at which point we'll dispense it according to all applicable claims and contracts, eh?"
"When will that be?" Gorm asked.
"Oh, not long, not long. 2-3 days at the most," Arbiter Thorpe assured them. "Just enough time for representatives of the Temple of Tandos and the Crown to come in from Aberyth."
He handed Niln a small slip of paper.
"The Guild has arranged for your stay at Cadena's Rest, hey? Fine little inn. You'll be comfortable there. I'll send word when we can start arbitration."
"And our ranks?" asked Gorm.
"Hey, should be processed by then, yes. Can't see why not. Maybe a day or two more."
A few days. Less than a week from regaining his lost status. He'd send a petition to the Dwarven Embassy at Andoran first thing. He could be back within the halls of Khazad Im within a month. They'd call him Pyrebeard once more.
"We did it," Caitha whispered to him as they walked from the Arbiter's office.
"Aye," said Gorm. "Soon, everything's going to be different."
The man introduced as Arbiter Thorpe watched the 7 heroes of destiny leave the office. His smile disappeared the moment the door shut behind them, and he sprang into motion at a decidedly un-Thorpe-like speed. He took a thin black case from a drawer and placed it on his desk. It snapped open when he touched a silver latch, revealing several pairs of tiny crystals arranged in neat rows. Each pair had a small silver plaque between it, engraved with a name or location. As he pressed the crystals with a fingertip, they illuminated, with a faint emerald light from within if they were above the plaque, and a warm ruby glow if below. Niln of the Almatrans, green. Hertzwood, green. The Elven Marbles, red. The Baitwolds, green. The Mask, green. The man snapped the case shut. He opened the door of a small closet at the back of his office and wheeled out a maid's cart, a dress draped across its top. He placed the black case on the 2nd shelf of the cart, and then hefted the strong box of loot onto the shelf next to it. It took only a quick reshuffling of the towels, doilies, and dusters on the cart to effectively conceal its illicit cargo. Working with methodical efficiency, he selected a small carmine vial from the various cleaning solutions and soaps on top of the cart. He grabbed the manila envelope that contained the 7 heroes' paperwork from the desk as he passed. His mustache twitched upward with an elusive smile as he dropped the envelope into the metal waste bin.
"Tell Damrod I said hello," he muttered.
Squeezing his eyes shut, he poured a single drop of red liquid into the bin. With a blinding flash and a whiff of sulfur, the sealed envelope, along with its contracts, commissions, and other pieces of crucial paperwork, was reduced to a sad pile of ashes around a few drops of hissing wax, which the man emptied into a larger trash can on the cart. A dirty teacup, still laced with traces of sleep root, was tossed into the trash as well. The man's leathery skin rippled and smoothed. His rolls of fat wobbled and receded back into his body so that his clothes slid from him as he walked across the office. His mustache receded into his lip, and his complexion shifted from a rosy pink to ash gray as he opened the door to the water closet. By the time he had dragged the nude but otherwise comfortably dozing Arbiter Thorpe from the water closet, the mask had returned to his original form. The doppelganger redressed the prone Arbiter with considerable effort and then rolled him back into position behind the desk. A short time later, a maid walked out of Arbiter Thorpe's office, leaving the old man comfortably napping. She pushed her cart out of the servants' entrance, turned down a side alley, and was never seen again. Cadena's Rest was a small, pleasant inn just outside Hertzwood's walls. A stocky house covered in forest-green shingles, the slate above the door depicted the wandering goddess relaxing by a peaceful stream. The beer was cold, and the meat still pink in the middle, and the beds were free of lice. It was everything a dwarf could want in a tall folk inn. Gorm awoke from the best night of sleep he'd enjoyed in a long while, looking forward to a few days of relative peace before the loot was divided and points were awarded. The best start to any day was a plate of runny eggs and chewy bacon with a slab of oat bread and a pot of coffee to wash it down. He was halfway through the greasy, glistening platter of breakfast when Niln found him. The High Scribe bade him good morning as he took the seat Gorm offered, but politely declined to order breakfast.
"I've packed some biscuits for the road," Niln explained.
"The road?"
Gorm looked up fast enough to launch tiny globules of egg from the tips of his whiskers.
"Where are you going?"
"I have decided to return to Andoran as soon as possible, back to the temple."
Gorm's mind raced. He wasn't sure he could technically complete the quest without Niln, and he didn't wish to find out. They'd come too far to lose everything on a technicality.
"But the loot?"
"I've taken vows of poverty, Mr. Ingerson. The Temple of Almatra was always to have my share."
"But you're the seventh!"
"You have never humored me before," said Niln. "Don't start now that I can finally admit the truth. I am not the seventh hero."
Gorm grunted, but nodded in assent. The High Scribe seemed to sense the source of the dwarf's anxiety.
"I will talk to the Temple of Tendos about how best to release you from service, but you have fulfilled your contract. I will see that all of you are compensated."
"And what will ye do?"
"I will resume my life as a scribe, and I will be available to advise you on the prophecy as you strive to fulfill it."
"But you just said you were through with this prophecy nonsense."
"No,"
said Niln with sudden urgency. He gripped Gorm's arm with a strength he didn't look capable of and stared into the dwarf's eyes with uncharacteristic fierceness.
"I said that I am not the seventh hero. I was to gather the heroes of destiny, and I assumed that made me the seventh. I wanted to be Gorm. I wanted it to the point of blindness. But even if I failed to see my role for what it was, that doesn't change your part to play. You have been chosen, Gorm, as have Caitha, Laruna and Jin, Gaist, and even Heraldin, though the goddess alone knows why. You are the heroes of destiny."
"Niln,
please, Gorm."
Niln pulled a bundle wrapped in heavy leather from his satchel and pressed it into Gorm's hands.
"Look, these are the books of Niln, all of my scriptures, and collected notes on the prophets who came before me. You must take the prophecy and learn the signs so that you can find the seventh hero and stop the Dark Prince."
Gorm tried to extricate himself from Niln's prophecy as gently as possible.
"Lad, I don't think any of that is going to happen," he said, pushing the books back to the High Scribe. "I don't know who your books are talking about, but it ain't me. Probably ain't any of us. It definitely ain't Heraldin," he added.
"Just take them," the priest begged. "Take them and pretend you'll read them. Say you'll study them and learn your destiny. For me. Tell yourself it's the lie that I need to believe."
Gorm was skeptical.
"And that will satisfy you, even if you know I'm just going to shove them into me rucksack and never think of them again?"
"Yes, because I don't think you'll do that.
That's the lie you need to believe.
Perhaps, Gorm allowed, his lip twitching into a hint of a smile.
Have it your way, lad. I'll take your books and read about what to do.
It's what to look for, Niln corrected. The signs will tell you that your destiny is coming. When it comes, you'll already know what to do.
If you say so, said Gorm, stuffing the satchel into his pack. So, when do you plan to leave?
Now. Niln stood and lifted his own pack. I sent a falcon to the Silver Talons yesterday afternoon. A contingent is on its way from their base in Aberyth, and I shall meet them at an inn a day's ride to the west.
Have you said goodbye to the others?
The High Scribe smiled wistfully at the window.
Last night we drank and laughed and talked about the quest and the future, he said. Everybody was happy to see me, and everyone had nothing but kind words, and it was almost like I was the hero I always wanted to be. And perhaps, if you come and ask me for help with the prophecy, it will feel that way again. But until that day, last night is how I'd like to remember you all, and all the more how I'd have you remember me.
It was a good night, said Gorm.
Niln gave him a small smile, but his mismatched eyes were filled with melancholy.
It was a good adventure.
A grand one.
And when you think about it, it was remarkably smooth for a quest everyone predicted to be a disaster.
It suddenly struck Gorm that, all things considered, the boy was right.
Aye?
It's almost enough to make one believe in destiny,
quipped the High Scribe, already on his way to the door.
Don't push it, smirked Gorm. Goodbye, Niln.
Goodbye, Gorm.
With a nod and a wave, Niln was gone. The High Scribe's parting jest about the ease of the quest was meant to be funny, but the fact of it was like an itch that Gorm's mind couldn't scratch. He was reminded of the joke again when he told the other heroes about Niln's departure, even as they solemnly agreed that Niln's decision was probably for the best. The remark flitted to mind again as, during a light lunch at a street-side cafe, Jin pointed out that the streets of Hertzwood had become conspicuously empty of adventurers. The thoroughfare that had been mobbed with professional heroes the day before was now empty. There wasn't so much as an idealistic farmhand with his father's sword. By the time dinner was served at Caden's Rest, Gorm was still pondering. Why had the quest been so easy? Something in his bones screamed that this was wrong. It just wouldn't say what.
Are you all right? Caitha asked.
Just thinking.
It's just that you've still got most of your steak left, said Laruna. It isn't like you.
I'm letting it cool before I eat it.
Right. It's not like you at all.
Got me there, said Gorm.
He shoved a bite of beef into his mouth for show, but he took no pleasure from it, or not much, anyway.
So what rank will you be after your paperwork goes through? Caitha asked Laruna.
The Solomancer broke into a wide grin.
9th. Ooh, one more and it's time to specialize, and I'm sure you're going to choose Pyromancer. That's a safe bet for anyone who's seen me trying to weave water or light, laughed the mage. Still, I expected it would take at least another 5 years of adventuring before I could wear the red robes, and that was before I got recruited by the Almatrans. Gods, I assumed my career was over when I got tricked into signing on with Niln,
Caitha said.
Well, that was optimistic of you, laughed Laruna. I thought we were all going to die. And look at us now, said Caitha. This was the best thing that could have happened to our careers.
She held up her glass of wine.
To Niln! And to crazy Almatra as well, and to whatever god of fortune sent us such an easy and profitable quest while we're at it.
Gorm's brow furrowed as the women laughed and toasted. It was beyond good fortune. A few weeks ago he'd been trying to survive the adventure, and now he was waiting to split up one of the top 10 halls he'd ever taken in. They'd had more than one spot of trouble, and having a troll for a bodyguard had made things smoother, but all told the quest had been easy. The first interview at the Elven Embassy had given them a tip that pointed them to where Datar had hidden the Elven marbles. By the odds, they should still be searching for leads as to the marbles' whereabouts. He was still lost in thought late that evening, while Haraldin and Geist were engaged in their nightly games of thrones.
"You know, my friend," said the bard, "the key to victory is to know your opponent, to understand how your adversary works. And all these weeks that we've been playing this game, every game that you've defeated me, I've watched for the pattern in how you play. And I think I've found it."
The other heroes watched the game with renewed interest. Geist didn't move.
"Your pattern is that there is no pattern.
As soon as I figure out how you're moving, the instant I see what strategy you are employing, you shift to another tactic. You are always where I'd least expect it." Geist looked almost amused as he advanced to Bannerman. "But there is a limit to how long you can hide yourself, my friend," Heraldin advanced a knight. "No matter what strategies or maneuvers your adversary cloaks himself in, you cannot face him for so long without growing to know the man behind the mask." Geist's amusement faded. Gorm saw the weapons master hesitate as he moved as king. "It has been a pleasure getting to know you," said Heraldin, his eyes sparkling, his grin triumphant. He moved a knight. "I think you'll find I just won." The weapons master stared at the board in front of him. He reached out and stoically toppled his king. "Oh, come now, don't be such a sore sport," said Heraldin.
"He doesn't seem upset," Laruna said from her seat by the fire.
"Clearly you don't know him as I do," said the bard. "Play a couple hundred matches of Thrones with him, and you'll recognize a tantrum well enough. I've lost 214 times to you, my friend. Don't begrudge me my first win."
Geist said nothing, but he flipped his king back up to standing position. With a slight nod, he began to set the board up again.
"A rematch?" said Heraldin, setting up his own pieces. "You'll regret it. I'm only down by 213, and my comeback is on a hot streak. Remember, I know you now."
The exchange reminded Gorm of something else that didn't sit well. He knew the Heroes Guild well. He'd been their favored son for 20 years, and had then spent more than another 20 exiled from them. In all his decades of service, he'd never seen the Guild treat unproven heroes with such respect. A free mercenary escort, a prearranged meeting with an arbiter on their return, deferring to Niln on the distribution of the elven marbles. It wasn't the Heroes Guild he knew. He brooded until long after the other heroes had gone to their rooms for the night. His bed brought him no comfort, and he spent a sleepless night tossing and turning. The truth seemed like a whisper too low to hear, or a shadow forever in the corner of his eye. The rest of the party was halfway through breakfast by the time he stamped down to the dining room and slumped into his chair. "Rough night?" Heraldin asked. Gorm grunted and quaffed the bard's coffee in reply.
"Rough night," said Caitha, waving to the waitstaff.
A pretty barmaid in a plain russet dress brought Gorm his customary pile of bacon and eggs and a tin carafe of coffee for the whole table. The maid filled Jin's mug last and shot him a wink as she did so.
"Ah, it seems you've attracted the attention of one of the tavern's fine serving girls," Heraldin told the noctomancer.
"It seems as much," said Jin. He quietly attended to his own breakfast of dry toast and poached eggs.
"Don't pass up an opportunity to enjoy the finer things in life, my friend," said Heraldin. "And I can say from experience that the barmaids here are—"
"Thank you, Heraldin," chorused the table.
"I'm merely suggesting that you introduce yourself to her during our stay," Heraldin said.
"I appreciate that, but I'd rather not," said Jin.
"Perhaps you'd prefer to kidnap her instead," suggested Laruna.
The expectant hush of a crowd before a fight fell over the table. "I've put up with a lot these past few days, and I imagine I shall be forced to endure much more before we can finally disband." Jin spoke softly, his voice shaking with restraint. "But I'm not going to sit here and take false accusations. I never kidnapped anyone, nor did my father.
"Don't be ridiculous," said Laruna. "Everyone knows that the Ermaians kidnapped Princess Marja to
bloody ashes to what everyone knows," snapped Jin. "If I traded 3 whiskers for common knowledge, I'd be cheated. Marja was sent by her father, the King of Ruskan. He was the one who proposed the marriage."
"Why would the king propose a marriage to the son of a necromancer?" asked Caitha.
"Oh, everyone hates necromancy, except when shrines must be erected, or elixir must be brewed, or the dearly departed must be consulted to get the combination for the family safe. Necromancy is half of vitamancy, and we use it every day."
"Well, yes, but there's a line that shouldn't be crossed," said Laruna.
"And I'd say Project Leviathan crossed it," said Heraldin.
"Project Leviathan wasn't even necromancy," said Jin. "Necromancy is still weaving high magic, the warp and weft of noctomancy and solomancy. My father and his peers were searching for low magic, the loom that high magic is woven upon."
"The magic of the Sten," sneered Laruna. "Magic that changes destinies and levels kingdoms and brings the dead back. Magic that no mortal should have. "Magic that kings and queens cannot resist," said Jin. "Who do you think funded Project Leviathan? How do you think my father and his compatriots gained so many artifacts in so short a time? It was secret, yes, but not from the kings of Ruskin or Andoran. They bankrolled the work until Azanon grew too powerful, too ambitious, and turned to darker magics. Once the project went sour, the kings sought to bury it."
"That still doesn't explain why they would marry Marja to you."
"Obviously they never intended us to marry," said Jin. "The princess was a false peace offering, a death sentence disguised as a gesture of goodwill. Perhaps Father saw through it, and that's what turned him to the dark arts. But at least in appearance he accepted it. And once she was in our tower, the kings spread word that my father had carried out the kidnapping." Gorm jolted so hard that he spilled his coffee.
"So the guild could declare him a foe."
"Exactly," said Jin. "All you need is a perceived threat sitting atop something of great value, and the guild will send in the heroes to wipe out the enemy and loot everything worth a copper from the corpses. Why not send in a false offering? They'll get it all back with interest." And finally Gorm knew the truth, and saw what had been gnawing at him. His stomach felt like lead.
"Get to the horses," he gasped.
"What?
No!" roared Gorm. "We need to get to Bloodroot!"
Poldo was surprised to find that Mr. Goldson and Mr. Baggs weren't behind their desks. The offices had been a maelstrom of frantic activity since yesterday, when the opening of a new dungeon sent the brokers and traders into a frenzy. Poldo had left his own office looking like a blizzard had swept through, with papers piled like snowdrifts in the corners around his desk. It was going to take his staff a week to sort out everything the firm had bought and sold. Yet Mr. Goldson and Mr. Baggs were relaxing in front of their great panel windows, sipping brandywine from crystal snifters, and watching the traders and merchants along the wall clamor in the street below.
"You wanted to see me, sirs?"
"Ah, Poldo, do come in," said Mr. Baggs,
without looking away from the window.
"Pour yourself a glass," said Mr. Goldson, nodding to the bar.
Poldo measured out two fingers of brandywine, and then added enough to make it an even fist. He gulped half of it down before joining his bosses at the window.
"Look down there, Poldo," said Mr. Baggs. "What do you see?"
Poldo peered down at the wall.
"It looks to be stock traders, sir."
"It's the free market,"
said Mr. Goldson, watching the commotion below.
"It's commerce unleashed, shaping the world more than any war ever has."
"It's the way of the world,"
said Mr. Baggs.
"Pure, unbridled competition. The strong rise to the top, and the rest sink." "And do you know how we stay there?"
Mr. Goldson asked.
"I couldn't say, sir."
"Aggression,"
said Mr. Goldson.
"Bold, decisive action against those who stand in our way."
"Quite,"
agreed Mr. Baggs.
"Take, for example, the matter in the Baitwolds."
"Sir?"
"An old beet farming community,"
said Mr. Baggs.
"Or it was, until it was overrun by orcs carrying those silly NPC papers. Now Vorpal Corp has a couple of factories there." "And we have a majority interest in Vorpal Corp," said Mr. Goldson. "Did you know that the pig-nosed blighters had the gall to start a competing company?"
said Mr. Baggs.
"They were even trying to undercut us. What gives greenskins such gumption?"
Poldo shifted uncomfortably.
"Well, sir, they do say that all men are equal in the Creator's eyes."
"Do they now?"
said Mr. Baggs.
"That doesn't sound right to me." "Total nonsense,"
agreed Mr. Goldson. He looked down at the brokers and the merchants churning several stories beneath his feet.
"If all men are created equal, how can the best man win?"
"I couldn't say,"
said Mr. Poldo.
"Of course you couldn't, Poldo," said Mr. Baggs. "That's what's wrong with you. You only see problems, never solutions." "The field of professional heroics is about to change," said Mr. Goldson. "There are going to be a lot more foes about for adventurers to slay and loot, but you've been too busy making dour predictions to foresee it." "Let alone to help us make the change happen," said Baggs.
Poldo felt like he'd been punched in the gut.
"Sirs, I've only endeavored to do what is best for the company."
"Perhaps, Mr. Poldo," said Mr. Goldson, stroking his thinning snow-white beard. "But Goldson Baggs measures results, not endeavor. There is no reward for effort here." "Well,
Maybe a small one, said Mr. Baggs. Unfortunately, it comes in the form of a severance package. You will put in your notice and letter of resignation by the end of business today.
But, sirs, protested Poldo, panic rising in his voice, I was only doing my job. Goldson Baggs faces a serious problem with its portfolio.
No, we recently faced a serious problem, said Mr. Baggs. Indeed, said Mr. Goldson, grinning at the city sprawling before him. But we solved it.
Lord, we are betrayed, said Dengark, his long mustache blowing in the ill wind that swept over Bloodroot's ramparts.
Zerthraka grimaced. Below him, the gates rumbled and clanked as the party of professional heroes attempted to batter them down. The bodies of the orcs' advanced guard were strewn around the road. A few corpses of goldhounds lay with them as well. Three guild parties had been cut down by the honor guard as they tried to storm the gatehouse. The fourth group of goldhounds, however, had slaughtered his exhausted men with little trouble and were now pounding at the city's great doors. The goldhounds at the gates would fall. Zerthraka had many more troops inside the walls, but a fifth party of hired heroes was already polishing their arms a few paces back from the gates, and a sixth and a seventh and an eighth just behind them. And beyond them, the road was crammed with heroes, all armed to the teeth, all waiting to take the city of Bloodroot and its treasures, as numerous as locusts, as certain as the grave.
Bring me my geist,
Zerthraka said.